Well, I'm not wearing a Celtics jersey, so for some of you that's a relief. But yeah, they are here, and I'm glad to be speaking. I told Troy that they were coming, and he gave me the gracious opportunity to present the word to you. Now, before I start, I am hungry. I didn't have breakfast this morning, I will admit. Most breakfasts I do not have, so I hope you guys don't mind. I'm just going to eat a little sandwich while I preach, so I hope none of you guys mind. I know some of you take naps, so you take a nap while I eat this, but I'm going to eat that throughout. But
Sandwich!
Thank you, Andy. But many of you are very confused at what just happened, okay? You don't know why I have a sandwich up here. You don't know why Andy just ran up and punched it. You don't know why he just screamed sandwich. Well, I'm going to fill you in a little bit, so don't worry. There's two type of people in this world. There's people who play the game sandwich, like Andy and I had just played, and there's people who don't play, which is all of you. Unless you've played it, in which you know exactly what happened. But this is a game that my friends and I in college would play all the time. It is called Sandwich. The rules of the game is if you have a sandwich, which by definition is bread, something in the middle, and bread on top, and it is not protected, which means not in your hands, or something's not on it, another person also playing sandwich could run up, scream sandwich, and punch it. Now, most of the time we'd play this in the cafeteria, so it wasn't a big deal because you just went and made another sandwich. But we introduced this game to our fellow ministry students on a retreat that we'd have every year. We had just hiked down into this valley, and we had hiked out, and we had packed our lunches, and we were all hungry. We were starving. We sit around all these picnic tables, and what do we have? We have sandwiches. My friend and I, knowing this game very well, and a few people introduced, they agreed to play. Now, make sure if you're going to play this game today at lunch, make sure both parties agree, because no one likes their sandwich punched. Okay? So, kids, don't just go be punching your parents' sandwich. I'm not responsible for any trouble you get into. But we're sitting there, we're walking up and down, and we're looking over people's shoulders, waiting for them to pull out their sandwiches and leave a sandwich unprotected. And now these sandwiches had turkey, mayo, and mustard, so you can imagine, when you punch a sandwich pretty hard with mayo and mustard and a lot of it on there, it goes everywhere. So people had fists covered in mayonnaise and mustard, punching people's sandwiches, and it got to the point where we were told to stop because this game was too violent. Now, unlike the cafeteria where you could go and get a new sandwich, people were hungry enough. So now they had to eat this fist hole inside a sandwich, this squished sandwich, and eat it anyway because they were that hungry from hiking. So you can divide people up into those who play the sandwich game, those who don't. You can divide people all kinds of ways. You can divide them into your friends, your enemies. You can divide them into friends and family. But I suggest there's one way that people get divided. I've heard this sermon back when I was about 11, and I've never forgotten it. There are people, and then there are people. Now, again, you might be looking at your things and say, people. No. There's people, which are your outer circle, this ring that you see in your notes. There's people, maybe your coworkers, maybe those that you have conversation with on Sunday, but not much. But then over here, you have your people. You have those that when crisis hits, you're giving them a call the first thing. You have good news, you're calling up. Now, these people could be your spouse. They could be your kids. They could be your best friend. They could be anyone, but they're divided in two different worlds. Now, I'm lucky enough to have some of my people here today, in my grandparents and my parents. And then also, I have these people. These are some of my best friends from college. These are the people that I'm playing sandwich with on a regular basis. Now, most of these pictures are from freshman year, so these are almost 5 years ago. But to this day, I've talked to them almost daily. There's a few that I call on a daily basis, and we could talk for hours and hours about some of the stupidest things out there. But most of the time, when we talk, it's about things that are going on, things that are troubling us. Some of them are pastors, some of them are accountants, so they just went through a really rough season for them. But these people are those that we go to, those that hold us accountable with those things. All those guys in there, we create a small group together that started being our freshman year, and we meet up until we graduated. We still video call sometimes, but we play video games together to hold each other accountable. These are the people where We would make fun of each other. I'm sure many of you make fun of those closest to you. But we'd bully each other in ways that was kind of unconventional. Some people would pick on each other the way they walked or just different inside jokes, but we'd pick on each other for not making it to Sunday school or to our small group or not making it to church. Things that we'd bully each other, but holding each other accountable. And so I would put every single one of these guys up there in that inner circle. And so if you're a note taker, you don't have any words to fill out, but start filling out who would be in those circles. Who are your people on the outside, people you might enjoy, interact with, even spend some decent amount of time with. But then you got your people. You got people that you're intentional living life with. People that are holding you accountable. People that when crisis hits, you're calling them first. People when good things, that's who you're calling. People you share life with. Now, you might be sitting here like, either A, I don't need either one of those. I can go at life alone. I'm a lone wolf. I only need a few people. But even one is enough to hold you accountable for things. You might be sitting here like, I don't have either. I'm a lone wolf, not by choice necessarily, but those are just how life has shaken out at this point. And so I'm going to challenge you to find those people, people you can live life with each and every day. And Jesus is the ultimate example of how we live our lives. And you might be saying, I can do what I want. I can live life however I feel like it. I don't need these. I can deal with these little people. I can meet people on Sunday morning. But we're all here for a reason. Whether it be your parents drag you out of bed this morning, whether it be your spouse drag you out of bed, or whether you're here by choice because this is just what you do. It's a habit every Sunday. You come here. For some of us, it's our job and we're required to be here. Some of us are preaching, and if we weren't here, things might go wrong. But we're all here for a reason. We're all sharing in life together for a few hours today. And so, like Jesus, we're called to live like him. We're called to be social creatures. We are made for interaction. That's why half the time it's hard to get out of this building sometimes because you feel like you're just trying to get about 5 feet by about seven people are in front of you and you have to talk to all of them. They all have questions. And this church is one of those churches that has community. Some churches I've been to, they just empty out and we're closing up shop within 5 minutes of ending sermon. Others spend hours talking, and even after church, you go, hey, let's go out to lunch to continue this conversation because we want to live life together. And some of you get to live life together outside of Sunday mornings. Maybe you have dinner with certain people once a week. Maybe you go to small group together. Maybe you're in a Bible study. Whatever it is, people live life together. And Jesus is a phenomenal example of that. If you want to open your Bibles to Matthew 4, chapter 4, verses 18 through 22, while you're flipping there or looking it up on your smartphone, I'm going to give you some context of what's going on here. Jesus was just tempted in the wilderness. He had just overcome Satan being in Scripture. He then goes on to preach. He starts preaching to the masses. And also, while he's in the wilderness and he starts to preach, John the Baptist gets arrested. He gets put in jail, and that's where he'll stay. So we see this end of this man who's prepared a way for Jesus, given his life to it. His journey ends, and Jesus is just beginning. He's preached his first sermon, and now he's going out to call disciples. Now, in the times there, many wanted to be a rabbi's disciple. They wanted to study the word, so many of them up until 12 would study the word, but they weren't picked. So all these men that Jesus goes out and calls his disciples were not picked. They were not good enough. They were not top of the crop. Whatever, they weren't all stars anyway. So they decided instead of going and becoming a disciple, they went back to family business, maybe an uncle, maybe a father, but something like that. But in Matthew 4, 18 through 22, you see Jesus call his disciples. So as Jesus walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They are casting a net into the lake, for they are fishermen. Come, follow me, Jesus says, and I will send you out to fish for people. They at once left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, he saw two brothers, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat like their father Zebedee, preparing for nets. Jesus called to them, and immediately they left their boat and their father and followed him. So again, we see this. Not only is Jesus surrounding himself, he had plenty of disciples, and he had plenty of people that will start to follow him, and he had people around him. He had crowds of thousands of people, but he starts to call people. He starts to call people that he will live life with for the next 3 years. He calls people that they will travel together, that they will eat dinners together, that they will ask numerous questions, even if it seems boneheaded to us, like obviously isn't that obvious, Peter. But they spend life together. And I'm sure there's plenty of inside jokes. I'm sure there's plenty of things that they did together that aren't in the Bible. But they lived life together. They're not just God's people. They're not just people that interact with Jesus one time that we see in these different miracles that interact with him. Or even people that followed him town to town. But they are his people. They are his people that he could live life together. He shared the deepest, darkest secrets with them, right? And he even brings, even within that group of 12, there's even a closer group. There's even a few more circles, and that's how you might be. It might be, not be as simple as these two circles up here, where you have people you just interact with, your coworkers, people at church, whoever it be, but you have people that you live life with. And you cannot go at life alone without them. Jesus could have easily done his ministry on his own. He didn't need anyone. He could have performed all the miracles himself. He could have gone up there and preached. It could have just been him and God. And even then, he's not going at life alone. But he didn't need anyone. However, you guys do, and myself included, we need people. We need people to hold us accountable. If I went up to each and every one of you and started calling you out on everything wrong you did, most of you might look at me and say, you're crazy, you can't talk to me that way. And that's fair, because I would be the same way. But there's certain people in this world that they could sit you down and tell you everything you're doing wrong in your life, and you're like, you know what, you're absolutely right. Might be your spouse, might be your parents, might be your grandparents, or might be really close friends. But there's people that we allow our lives into this inner circle, into our deepest, darkest secrets, that can hold us accountable. And we're called to do that. Now, they help us deal with crisis mode. They help us deal with problems, things that we're going through. A lot of our small group time with my friends was talked about, what are you struggling with? What classes are you struggling with? How are you struggling with temptations and all these types of things? But a lot of it, too, was happy things. I remember one of my friends got engaged, and it was almost kind of like a bat signal, but we all lived together, and we had a little lamp that had an iPad, could change colors. But if it was a certain shade of blue, that meant that night, whatever you were doing, you were in the living room at midnight because someone needed to say something. So usually it was either really good or something really bad, whatever it was. And so at this time, my friend does that, so we all get around, and first thing we ask is who turned on the blue light, and he says, I did. And so we start talking to him, and he goes, I'm engaged. And so it was one of the happiest things, and he was one of the first people to tell us, other than some close family members, but we were so happy for him in that. And he told us first because we were his people. We were people that shared life together, that we ate together, that we lived together, and we were there to celebrate with them. We've also helped each other with horrible times. One of my friends, his mom just recently passed away from cancer. And so a lot of them, who all live in Ohio still, went out to the funeral. We made calls. We sent him cards and gifts and all kinds of things. Because even in tragedy, he kept us updated. We have group chats and whatnot. But you keep us updated and praying for him. But we are his people. He's not an open guy. He's not someone who talks a lot. And so for him to share this with us was huge. He wouldn't just share it with any one of his people, his coworkers, people that he met at school, whatever. But he shared it with his people, the deepest, darkest things we shared with each other, and including the light. So if we flip to John chapter 1, verses 43 through 51, I think this is probably the coolest calling of the disciples that Jesus does, because the other ones, he calls them and they join him. But here, he calls Nathan. He calls Philip. And the first thing Philip does, Jesus says, hey, I call you. And he accepts, but the first thing, he doesn't stay and talk with Jesus. The first thing he does is he runs to his people. He runs to Nathan, his best friend, one who studied scripture with them. They had spent life together. They had grown up to each other. So as soon as he found out good news, the first thing he did was go to him. And in verse 45, Philip found Nathanael and told him, "We have found the one Moses wrote about in the law and whom the prophets were also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, son of Joseph." He immediately found this incredible person. He didn't keep it for himself. He didn't tell the masses at this time. But he tells his best friend. That's the first thing you do. I'm sure many of you, especially if you're younger, someone tells you something really juicy, something that might be a little secretive, and you go, "I won't tell anyone." And then you go tell that one best friend that will totally keep the secret. You're like, "I swear, just me and them, we're just going to tell us everything." Right? We all that person, or it might be your spouse for those older. But we tell them everything. He found the Messiah, and the first thing he did was he told his person. The person he lived life with, the person he shared meals with. The two of them were very deep into Scripture, even after the period of studying. And Nathanael goes on to question God, and Jesus answers all his questions, and he follows too. And so the two of them, whenever they're mentioned in the Bible, the two of them are mentioned together. You see the disciples, the 12 disciples, mentioned in groups of four usually. And a couple of them are always paired with each other. Usually siblings are paired with each other. But the two of them are best friends, and they get mentioned together all the time. I have one friend in particular that I'm probably the closest with, and we would always sit together in class. Senior year, we were roommates. We worked together for 12 hours. We were both ministry majors, so we all shared the same classes. I think we calculated we were spending, on average, close to 24 hours a day together. There's a few hours every now and again that we wouldn't share together, but every waking day, we'd wake up together, we'd go to sleep together. We shared life to the fullest extent that you possibly could. And so we grew very close to each other. And it became a thing where you never saw one without the other. And if you did on one miraculous day, it was always the first thing people usually ask me is, "Hey, where's Ben?" Or Ben would be asked, "Hey, where's Josh?" Because normally it's just, there's Ben and Josh out together, whatever it is. And so we live life together and told everything. And the disciples do that. And we are called to do that no matter where we are in the country. Doesn't matter if you move across the country from New England to Oregon, you're called to live with people. You're called to spend time with them. You're called to invest in them. And you're called to hold them accountable. Up on the screen, you see the circle, the cross with a bunch of arrows. Cross obviously represents Jesus, and he's supposed to be the center of our world. These arrows represent us. We all have different journeys. Some of us are going towards the cross at 50 miles per hour. Some of us are kind of going by and going back and forth, kind of skating. Some people are entering into the circle, and some are leaving it. You could ask yourself, where do you stand? Which arrow are you? Or maybe you're an arrow that's not on the map, and draw yourself in. But not only are we one of these arrows, but the people we affect are these arrows, right? We can drive people away from God. We can bring people close to God. It all depends on how we live. And so when you live with people intentionally, they can call you out like, "Hey, that wasn't Christ-like of you. The way you talk to someone, that wasn't it." However you communicate with them. My friends and I, we would pull each other aside in the middle of, didn't really matter what was going on, but if we saw something, we'd call them out. Like, "Hey, what the heck are you doing?" And so you need those people in your life. And if you look at the two circles side by side and line them up, the cross is in the middle of your people. And that's not a coincidence. It's not a happy accident. But when we have people on the outskirts, we need to draw them in. There's arrows outside the circle. They need to be in that sphere of influence, that people. Because people can go from strangers to people to people. And as they get in that circle of your people, your sphere of influence, they also should be coming closer to God. The arrow should naturally come into the circle and be headed straight for that cross. Because if we're going to draw people, Christ is the one thing that separates us. We all may look alike, have different experiences, but at the end of the day, we're all flesh, bones, blood. Some of us have less, some of us have more, but we're all basically the same, right? We all eat, we all sleep. We might like the same foods, but at the end of the day, the one thing that separates us from those outside these walls is we call ourselves Christians. And I hope you don't just call yourself a Christian. I hope you act like a Christian 7 days a week. And so when we act like that, naturally, our people are going to be drawn to that. There's a famous businessman. He says that you are the average of the five people you spend most time around. So think about the top five people you spend time around. Take the average of all of them. Are you happy with that result? Or are you like, ugh. Right? Maybe like you spend a lot of time with your sibling. And you're like, ugh, I don't want that. That's all right. But we're the average of the five people we spend the most time with. And so obviously if you switch out those five people, you get different results. You get different averages. But if those five people are all arrows pursuing Christ, you guys as a group are going to pursue Christ. And when you add more people into that inner circle, when people become people, they go towards Christ, if you're doing it right. Jesus draws in the 12 people that he lives life with. Jesus leaves, he dies on a cross, he leaves, and the church explodes because they live life together, they held each other accountable, they asked each other the tough questions, and they were all drawn towards God. And so these people that have been following, watching from afar, maybe complete strangers over here, said, I'll listen to that sermon, I'll become people. I'll become in your sphere of influence. And you know what? I want to make the step and become some of your people. Many of them that go on to be murdered, some of them become pastors. And so they're bringing people in. So if you put yourself in the middle of that circle, are people drawing close to God? Now, whatever arrow you are, you can take that people circle and move that arrow, right? Because you might be, honestly, you might be really struggling. You might have doubters. You might not believe what Christ is telling you, that he's in your life, that he's with you, you're going through something hard, and you might honestly be an arrow that's kind of walking away. But are your people going to bring you back? Do you have people in your life that you can ask tough questions, that you can be brutally honest with? I have teens sometimes ask me questions, and I tell them, if I don't know the answer, I will be bluntly honest with you and say, I have no idea. But I'll look up the answer for you. And so, if you are the average of the five people that spend the most time around, most invest, what do you look like based on those five people? Are you someone who's devoutly Christian and goes to church because they want to hear the word of God, they want to communicate with people? Or are you here because it's just a routine? Are you here because someone forced you to be? Or some annoying person has been asking you for about 2 months and you're like, fine, I'll finally go just to shut you up. And maybe this is your first Sunday in church ever. In that case, I am so glad you're here. And there's some amazing people in this church that you should get connected with. If you don't have people, look around you. There's plenty of people that would love to invite you into their circle. I've been fortunate enough for people to give me samples of their cooking. And let me tell you, we have some great cooks in here, so invite yourself over. I'm sure they'd love to put out a plate for you. And their food's going to be really good too. Right? If you don't know how to cook, take them out somewhere. But spend time and invest people. And look out who's investing in you. Okay? Just because you're an arrow going towards it doesn't mean you can't get pulled away. Be accountable to yourself and be accountable with others. Having people with different situations, different backgrounds, different experiences helps us all shape. I don't have the same experience as any of you. And you don't have the same experience as anyone else in here. And so, when we have people around us, they shape us. But when we have people, God is going to use those people to shape us. I wouldn't be the person I am. I probably wouldn't be here without some of those friends there pushing me to listen to God because I didn't know where I was going. I might not be here if it wasn't for my grandma telling me no at a certain church. I don't know where I'd be if I wasn't born into a Christian household with parents that loved me, with grandparents that supported them and taking care of my brother and I. I don't know where I'd be, but I'm thankful for the people that are in my life and have held me accountable to where I am today. And I'll be thankful as people continue to hold me accountable to who I am. And if you don't have that accountability, people or person, at least one, I'm more than happy to follow up with you. I'm sure Pastor Troy is too. and get you connected with people that will hold you accountable and ask you the tough questions of life. So as the band comes up, typically I end my sermons at youth group with a challenge. Most of the time the teens complain that it's too hard or they don't want to do it. I want to ask you a couple of questions for you to think about and some challenges for you. One, identify who are your people and who are your people. Identify who is in the outer circle, who is maybe outside the circle, and who is in that innermost part of the circle. Are you and those people headed for Christ? Are you one of those arrows heading straight for God? Are you going by him? Are you going outside the circle? I always tell the teens, you got to figure out where you are first to get to the end destination. I tell my teens, I don't care where you are on this road that we call life and the spiritual journey. Tell me where you are and I will try to get you where you need to go. I will run along life with you. I want you to evaluate those five people that influence your life the most. The average of those people. And if you keep thinking about that or don't really want to think about that because you don't like the answer to it, change it. Spend time with those who are pursuing Christ that will keep you accountable and you can go with them. And at the end, once you've identified those people, you identify where you are, as a group, are you going towards Christ? As a group, a foundation of Christians and people that love God and love each other, are you headed in the right direction? That is my challenge to you this week. Figure out who your people are, but figure out who your people are. Figure out who you share life with, and if you don't, find them. Find people that you can share every moment of life with, because if you're both heading towards God, it's going to be a great time. Even through the pain, even through the valleys of life, you will have a blast. Because even accountability and hard questions, they will love you no matter what, and you will love them no matter what. Thank you.